ESPN's John Keim, a man who knows something about, we have this previously scheduled interview, but there's news. He had a scheduled interview with Mayor Bowser that he conducted yesterday. You can listen to the thing in full on his podcast, The John Keim Report. Obviously, the news from the weekend with the president's social media activity and such infiltrated that interview. But John, we'll actually start on the field. I thought we were going to start off the field with your interview with the mayor and the latest on RFK, but as of 4 o'clock today, Terry McLaurin did not report to Commander's camp. I'm not going to ask you, like, are you surprised? Because obviously no. When a guy's in a contract holdout, that's not surprising. But if I were to take you back to, like, March, and if I asked John Keim in March, Terry McLaurin's going to hold out, is that surprising to you? Would you have thought that's where we were headed back then?
In March, probably not. Probably not, because you know, we've all been around these things, and they typically get done. I think you hit a point when he didn't come to the mandatory minicamp. Now, he did that last time, too. I think, he left the voluntary stuff that you kind of knew that it would be different, right? Like that, you knew it would be different at that point. And so I think at that time is when you start to say, okay, there's a really good chance that this goes into training camp, whether hold out or hold in.
So I know this has kind of been the million-dollar question. You certainly have more information on this than I do. So what do you – like, where do we think they are apart? Is it money? Is it years? Is it how they value the player? Like, what is the disconnect here as far as we know?
Well, it definitely feels like it's the money and, per year, et cetera. It does not sound like they're, I don't want to say how close they are, but there's a definite gap. That's why he's not here. That's why he was frustrated last week and expressed his frustration last week. So the hard part is with that gap that he can look at guys like DK Metcalf, whom his numbers in the league are comparable to DK Metcalf since they both came in the draft, same draft class. He can look at that and say, wait a minute, this is where I belong, and he just got a deal worth $32.5 million per year with 60 guaranteed. So he can look at that and say that, but the team can then counter, yes, and Garrett Wilson just got a deal, but Garrett Wilson is going to turn 25. He's 5 years younger. That makes a big difference when you're looking at a contract of this size. And McLaurin's going to be 30 in September. That makes a big difference. So, like, all of that adds up, and it's why it's hard. It's why I've always thought it would be hard, because what's the real comp here? Like, we can all look and say, yeah, he kind of is like DK Metcalf. Again, same draft class, similar numbers, but DK is a couple years younger, and that makes a difference. So, like, that's why I thought, it would be very tricky to get this one done in a reasonable amount of time after it started to drag on. So that's the hard part, Craig.
John Keim, ESPN, with us. I mean, I think we all have soft spots for Terry, and we all want to see the guy get paid because we've all been here through the things that he's been here through, and we kind of understand what he's gone through as a leader on this team and the things he's had to answer for that were not anything that he had to do. He's just trying to play football, that, and all that predates Adam and predates Josh Harris. So I think it's very easy for us to be like, they should just pay him. But what are the things the team is managing here? Because when I look at their cap sheet, it looks pretty clean. Like, I think they can afford to pay him, let's just say, the DK Metcalf deal. Like, from a cap standpoint, it seems like that is feasible. One, am I missing something on the cap sheet or potential future things that could be on the cap sheet? And two, obviously, that's not how business is done. You don't just pay guys the most you can do. So, like, what is the team trying to manage here in terms of how they're building their roster and how Terry fits in there?
I mean, one, there's always precedent, too, because you do this for him and then, like, well, who's next you're going to do it for? And if you suddenly pay everybody more because, just because, then what are you doing? Like, that's not how, you know what I mean? Like, who else are you going to make the exception for? And is it, they're going to be, they could have a lot of really good players coming up, which is what Terry is. So is that, if you're the team, you don't want to set certain precedent. They are very heavily analytic driven, and the analytics would show receivers it's not Terry at age 30 that's the issue, Craig. It's Terry at age 31, 32, 33, maybe 34. Like, that's where you have to look. Like, he's already under contract this year. So age 30 is not the issue. It's beyond that. So, like, that's what you're also going to look at if you're the team. So that's why I say, like, you kind of knew it was always going to be an issue, because that age 30 is a marker. And, again, the analytics would show that. Whether that's fair or not in his case is, you know, you can – it's another matter. Like, you, everybody would want it. Listen, in everybody's work, you don't want to be judged by what everybody else did. You want to be judged by what you're doing, what you did, and what you can do. Like, everybody should want that. And I think that's where McLaurin, that's what he clearly wants. So I think the other, you know, you do have Jaden's contract coming up, but that's not for several years. You do have, like, Tunsil, if you're going to resign him next year, that would be one as well that you're going to have to, you know, wrestle with. But they really don't have a whole lot else, because so they have so many guys on those one-year deals, and they're veterans, that you don't have a lot of that, but you will have at some point other guys who are going to have to be re-signed. So, you know, you have to take all that into consideration. I think the other thing is, like, clearly he means a lot to this fan base, not just like the fan base, the organization, the locker room, everything. Like, he is what people would want for a player on your team, right? I mean, he goes out there, works hard, plays with passion, produces, doesn't make, you know, he's never been a quote unquote diva receiver. There have been receivers here in the past who would give young quarterbacks a hard time. That hasn't been him. So, like, there's a lot there that you say, okay, what's the value on that? What, you know, and so I think that's part of it too, because you're right. Like, how do you factor that in for them to make sure you're taking care of one of your guys? And I think the last part, Craig, too, just looking at the divide, you have a guy here who was here through it. You mentioned all the garbage that went on here from the time he got here until last year, like, you know, until 2023 or whatever, excuse me. And the Dan Snyder stuff, I mean, the losing, all these quarterbacks, et cetera, you know, you would like, if you're him, like, hey, I went through all this, can you reward me for that? Or just pay me for all that. And if you're them, you can say, well, we're the ones who have made it better. We're the ones why it's going to be better the next few years. So is that part of the disconnect? Because, you know, I think that's why I say, like, there's a lot there, and you can look at each side and say, okay, that makes sense. So how do you get it resolved? Because you have to. Like, you have to get this resolved. They're much better with him, and I think he does very well with them. So it's you know, eventually it you have to get this resolved, whatever it takes, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, that's the thing, is my reaction to the news off the top of the show is basically like obviously, like I said in the setup to my first question, like, I'm not surprised we're here as of yesterday or even right. as of a week ago, but, like, if you just take a step back, like, it is shocking, this player and this front office, how glowingly they speak about each other, the things they stand for. Like, I think I have a fundamental understanding who they are and what they're about, and they're about the same stuff. It just seems bizarre that this has gotten to this point. But let me ask you this, the last thing on Terry, and then I do want to get to the RFK stuff, and maybe even we'll see if we have time for actual on field of people that showed up today. John, what a concept on the first day of training camp. When you say this is going to get resolved, there is a shrewd reality that if the team wanted to say, hey, man, we're apart, let's just put the contract negotiations behind us, we're going to play out the year, we'll do it again in the offseason. If Terry wants to keep holding out, like, he can, but all he's going to do is pick up fine money and then be a year older a year from now, eventually he'd probably just give in and come back. And then they could franchise tag him. And now you've got basically 2 years of pretty good money, and now Terry's trying to negotiate going into his age 32 season. That is obviously not a good deal for McLaurin. If the team wanted to be really shrewd, they could do that. Is there a chance that we at least do the first part of that, that he plays out this season on the current deal, or do you think they get something done?
I mean, I still would lean toward them getting something done, because it just makes sense. And I'll say this, you know, for McLaurin, part of you is like, okay, if you want to go tag me next year, it's 30, it'll be like, what, I think it's $30.4 million, and that may be higher than what they're wanting to go right now. So, you know, that would work out for him if they wanted to do that. And so, like, there's, you know, Kirk Cousins parlayed that into a ton of money over the years, right?
It was really funny watching Bruce Allen tell him on himself and the fact that he couldn't do basic math. That was one of my favorite things of the Kirk, probably my only enjoyable part of the Kirk Cousins contract snafu back in the day.
There were a lot of things Bruce didn't do. could that scenario happen? Like, I'm not taking anything off the table, because until you get it done, you have to account for anything. I would be, you know, the hard part is too with the CBA, the new CBA, like, you're not allowed to waive that fine money. So how much are you willing to forfeit? Now, there have been some guys in the past like, okay, I'll get fined, but don't make up for it with the deal. So, you know, with but it's a lot of money, man. It's a lot of money to not have to, you know, pay or whatever. So, like I said, Craig, I still think you would get something done, because, you know, keep in mind, it's the first time we've really gone through that this year in a while. Most of these situations, almost all, get resolved. You know, it's just maybe later in training camp, and it's, you know, you don't, what you don't want is to have this drag on multiple weeks, because history pretty much shows, and maybe it's more anecdotal, but that guys who come in late, especially at skill spots, tend to get hurt more. Even if you're doing a great job staying in shape, as we know McLaurin would. But, you know, so I think there's incentive to get it done just to avoid those scenarios. But Adam Peters was in San Francisco, and they had one with Debo Samuel. They had one with Nick Bosa, and those got resolved late. The Niners have had that a few times with others. Ayuk and Trent Williams got resolved late. So, you know, that's why I say, like, I'm not jumping to the, oh my God, would he request a trade? Oh, would he play it out? All that stuff. Like, you know, I think we're far from other scenarios at this point.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it's highly unlikely they would trade him. I would call his bluff in the regular season before I would trade him if I was them. But we'll see. All right, John Keim with us from ESPN. So you yesterday came into the district, which is quite a hike for you. You live very far away, John, notoriously.
Yes, it is. I need a helicopter.
Yeah, I mean, that. Hey, if you can get one, might as well. Those four letters, they do magic for you, John Keim of ESPN. You came in, you talked to Mayor Bowser. Phil Mendelson also was on Grant and Danny earlier today. He suggested that, like, the negotiations between the council and the team are going well. They're far down the line. They obviously have stuff they need to continue to figure out. What did you, like, as you walk out of Mayor Bowser's office or wherever you sat down with her yesterday, what was your biggest takeaway of where she is, where the team is, where the deal is for the Commanders to return to RFK?
I still think there's definite optimism, and I do think that a vote probably takes place, you know, within the next 2 weeks, you know, within the next couple of weeks, right? So they are on recess, but they can still vote. So that's, you know, that's, that won't be the holdup. Like, I think I would be really surprised if it went beyond a few weeks here. I think they know that if you don't get it done, probably in early August, that the chances start to diminish about their ability to get the stadium built by 2030, because there's all sorts of things you still have to do in the district with environmental studies or whatever just to get that stadium down too, right? Whereas opposed to, like, to be honest, if you went to Landover right now, you could get a deal. If you got a deal done in 2 weeks, you could have the shovels in the dirt in a different part of that area that they own within a week. So it's just much faster there. We're here, just a lot more things to go through. So you want to get that done ASAP. And they all know that. And I do think, I still sense the optimism that it will get done. But I think there's always, especially for the mayor, I mean, she's not in the middle of it right now. Like, it's up to the council and the team. Obviously, they're trying to work with the council to get whatever amendments or get whatever things clarified to the approval. And, you know, I think there could be a lot of times too, Craig, where if you're a reporter, you have a lot of editors looking at stories. Sometimes they want to put their input in the story. So you want to say, like, hey, I did this. So if you're a council member, do you want to try and get some jobs so you can tell your constituents, hey, I got this for us, right? Which I don't blame them. Like, that's how this works. And so I think there's a lot of things going on, but it does sound like that it's something could be voted on within the next couple of weeks to get this moving along, because it has to get to that point if they want to get to that 2030 deadline.
Yeah, I thought that was the most interesting thing coming out of that, that it feels like Bowser was more committal, or not more committal, more revealing about the timeline. You know, it's felt like that has been a pressure point that they, the team and her office have tried to kind of push on the council to get it done. And look, we know also that like Mayor Bowser and Phil Mendelson, the council chair, do not like each other. And that is very apparent in listening to either of them talk. They are taking shots at each other left, right, subtly and overtly. But I feel like she did kind of say like, yeah, we need to get, if we want this thing done by 2030, we need to have shovels in the ground next year, which means we need to have a deal done in the next couple of months.
Correct.
And so it does feel like we're still within, like the July 15 thing,
was
optimistic. But like, realistically, we are within a window here that this can still all work.
Yes, for sure. And, you know, I just think they want to, like, as she told me, like, they're at the one-yard line with this. Now, what I didn't ask, okay, is it first and goal or is it fourth and goal? And who are you handing it to? So, you know, but she used that phrase a couple times. So I think I would say, you know, they're even early on in this process, Craig, like you talk to members of the council, like they all thought it would still pass even before they were taking votes. And so I think we're still on that path. It's just, again, it's a matter of when, but I do think that sometime over the next few weeks, and, you know, clearly, like I said, the district does, I can't imagine that, you know, a lot of council members, they don't want to lose this either. Because there are no, the Congress is giving them this land for the next 99 years. Do you want, how long do you, and again, what you'll hear from, whether the people in favor, what they'll say is, how long do you want, if you don't do this, then what? What's the next thing that you can go there? And then how long would that take to actually get going, right? And, you know, as Mayor Bowser points out, like their argument is like, listen, there's a $2.7 billion anchor with the commanders willing to build here. So, you know, all that stuff, like if you don't want to vote for that, well, then what's the alternative for this property? And then if you're Congress, like, wait a minute, we're giving this land. What do you mean you're not doing? What do you, you know? So like there's all those things are at play that, you know, and of course that's what, you know, they're going to, that's what their take is. But I've, you know, talked to enough people who will say kind of the same thing. What, you know, and other people would kind of disagree with that, but that is a predominant thing you'll hear from people who definitely are in favor of it.
Yeah. All right. John Keim, ESPN with us. Of course, if you want the full interview with Mayor Bowser, you can listen to the John Keim Report. Also, he'll be doing daily podcasts after each and every training camp practice. John, I will wrap. I will give you a treat on the way out. A football question. I will leave it open-ended. What is the thing that you are most looking forward to day one of training camp? I know there's not a ton. I've been to enough day ones.
Yeah.
There's not a ton. But, like, is there something, someone, or let's even say the first week that you are like, all right, within this first week, I would like to have a feel for X.
Oh, what a feel for is, you know, watching guys like Marshawn Lattimore and Von Miller. Because Lattimore is such a big key with where he's at with his health, the durability, et cetera. Now, the durability, we're not going to know until the season. But where's he at with this game? He had talked about being able to drive on the ball a lot better than he was last season. So do we see that? And I saw that some in the spring. Now, sometimes it might be driving on a ball and the guy, you know, a little slant and go and you get burned. But that's fine. Like, are you driving on the ball? And that's what you want to see. And so, you know, watching guys like Von Miller, that I'm, you know, but the real thing, Craig, is like when you get to the padded workouts and more one-on-one opportunities, when you can see a Von Miller work against Josh Connolly, like how much is that going to improve, help Connolly develop as a tackle, especially when you have a lot of good pass rushers on the schedule early in the season. So like I like the one-on-one matchups, watching those guys. And the other one, the one I want to see is, which is why Terry needs to get in here, because I want to see him against Trey Amos. Like that, like he looks really good in the spring, but I want to see him against a top receiver, and that's McLaurin. So, you know, that's if I'll pitch in $5 if it gets him in here so we can watch that.
We'll have to call up, you know, the league office and see how that works for the salary cap mechanics, Johns. We can't have the team getting fined because they're circumventing the cap with $5 of John Kime's money. You know, that's it's not a good look.
I'll do it under the table.
All right, all right. Buckeye to Buckeye. I'm sure you guys can figure out the system. For more from John, ESPN.com. Again, the podcast is the John Keim Report. It's awesome. You need to listen to it if you want to know everything that's going on with the Commanders. John, always appreciate it, sir. I won't be able to be at camp these first couple of weeks, so I'm sad that I will miss you. But I'm actually going to Columbus, so there's that. So if you have your favorite restaurants in Columbus, you know where to send them. And I will talk to you very soon, my friend.
Thanks, Craig. Have fun.
Thanks, buddy. John Keim with us here on the Hoffman Show. When we get back, there will be 53 Commanders that make the roster. We will try to guess to our very best abilities who they will be. We'll start with the offense. We'll go from there next on the Team 980. Hoffman Show, we're on the Team 980, always live as well on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn Radio. All right. It is. Oh, wait. Do I have a way to do this? Oh, man. Nope. That's way too complicated. I was going to try to get it with the thing on the screen, Anthony, but I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. All right. It's time for a 53-man roster projection. We're going to do this before the season starts. It is really hard, man. I haven't even filled in any names but the specialists yet, and I'm already, like, cutting. I at least, like, tried to lay out some of the positions to fill things in, and It's going to be really hard. We got to get going because, this takes forever. 6 o'clock, you'll hear from Phil Mendelson, the DC City Council chairman, who was on Grant and Danny earlier. You'll also hear from Adam Peters in our pick six at six. And then we will get you some take command a little bit later on in the show as well. Hear from Logan on the Von Miller, signing. But when we look at this, offensive roster, Anthony, I kind of find it hard to see them keeping three quarterbacks, but they did last year. And the reason is because I need those positions, like I need that roster spot somewhere else. And I think Sam Hartman can get to the practice squad. So unless Josh Johnson is going to make the team, if we put Jaden Daniels as QB1 and Marcus Mariota as QB2, do you feel very strongly about adding a QB3 there?
I think we can survive without. And my thing is, I think with Josh Johnson, and maybe part of the reason he came here is because Jaden Daniels and Marcus Mariota won't play a lot in the preseason. So there's going to be opportunities for him to, you know, get some tape. So I would think Sam Hartman's probably going to end up being our QB3, and we allow him to go to the practice squad. And then if we can, you know, trade Josh Johnson, I don't know, to a team like the Titans.
No, I don't think – look, he was a free agent to be picked up in the middle of the spring. Like, he ain't.
But the Titans also just lost Will Levis.
I mean, that's true, and Josh Johnson would be a great mentor for camp. So maybe that is the case. Maybe you can get a seventh-round pick and a conditional – you know, hey, if he actually if he starts three games, you get a sixth. Like, maybe you can get something for Josh Johnson. I think more likely you just say, like, hey, man, like – stay by your phone. If we need you, we'll call you.
Yeah,
he's a
fair.
Great dude to have in the room all spring and summer long. There's a lot of value there. And God forbid something happens to someone, like you have him around as an option. But like that's kind of what happens, is eventually you got to make cuts. Sam Hartman, I think they love having him here. He's one of Jaden's best friends. Is he ready? Like, if he has to play, that's not good. But like, if Josh Johnson has to play, that's not good. So I just think there's too many good players elsewhere on the roster. I'm going two quarterbacks.
I'm with you. Let's get it.
Okay. I think they're going to wind up having to keep four running backs because I think they've got at least five that are worth keeping. This is a hard position, man.
I agree. This is hard. This is hard.
Brian Robinson Jr. is RB1. And I know that's like a hot – it's all of a sudden become a hot take. He's their best back. Now, is there a chance Bill – crushes it, and they're just like, you want to, well, let's just move on. Like, maybe, but like, I don't think there's any way he's not on the roster. I could also argue from just a pure runner standpoint, Chris Rodriguez is better. But again, like, B-Rob is the more complete player. So I think it's going to go B-Rob, Eckler, and then I think McNichols, like, he was really valuable in a very specific role last year. And then I think you get Kroski Merritt. And I think those are the four. I think there's a chance that C-Rod winds up taking the McNichols spot. But I just – that group is so good how in the world do you try to cut that down to three?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the other position battles, that RB3/RB4. But yeah, I think Krosky Merritt definitely makes the team. I think he'll have an opportunity during the preseason to show off what makes him so unique in terms of like his explosiveness. So I think he makes it. And then, you know, C-Rod and McNichols just going to have to duke it out. We'll see.
Right. I think that's the guys. They cut Michael Wiley today to make room for Von Miller, but they still have a couple other guys that, like, you're going to have some dude who has a great preseason game and not going to make it. Because, like, but that's the thing. That is the position that every year they're like, oh, there's no way they'll get player X to practice squad. And they do, because every team has a player X. So that is kind of the, like, Chris Rodriguez, could he get picked up somewhere else? Absolutely. Could he make it to practice squad again? Also, absolutely. Tight end is another one where I initially put in three, but is Colson Yankoff going to make the team again? He was excellent on special teams. They also have a bunch of other, like, in, like the Cole Turners, and like they got a really intriguing tight end room. I think a lot of those guys could probably get through, or they're just like not worth it as a tight end four. If you can get them to practice squad, very valuable to have as guys that might need to play some tight end snaps. But I think it's Ertz, I think it's Sinnott, I think it's Bates, and I would go Yankoff, as because he's so good on teams. Kind of in, I don't know if he's quite on the Tyler Owens, Jeremy Reeves level, but certainly, you know, just below that. And a guy that made enough plays as a tight end in the preseason last year, and I think had a pretty good spring, that I think he's going to make it again.
I was surprised he made it last year. I guess I won't be surprised if he makes it again. So I'm in agreement with you.
Okay, let's see. But he's like on the chopping block. He's right there.
Yeah, wide receiver 6-7, and then tight end 4.
Well, let's get to these wide receivers. This is brutal. All right, McLaurin on the team. Not currently with the team, on the team. Samuel, that's 2. Luke, or we say Luke is the, yeah, I'd say Luke is next. He was drafted last year. Lane is definitely making it. Then you get to the jumble of Noah Brown, who I think is basically a lock. And then that's 5, right? Then you've got the group of Gallup. Who else? Is that the list? If those guys, I mean, what if Gallup doesn't make it out of camp? I guess that's a possibility. But then you're looking at KJ Osborne, Chris Moore, Michael Strachan, Ja'Cory Brooks, Jacoby Jones. All those guys had moments in the spring, yeah. But I tend to think that those are the 5, that or those are the 6. It's McLaurin, Samuel, Brown, Gallup, Luke, and Jalen Lane. Luke McCaffrey, Jalen Lane.
Yeah. I think Gallup, though, will be battling with maybe a Chris Moore,
yeah.
Somebody else.
Oh, and also he's going to be battling his hamstrings. Like
that, too.
Dude retired because of injuries. Came back, didn't survive the spring.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it yesterday, health. So, like, you got to be healthy.
The good thing is I think guys like Ja'Cory Brooks, who's an undrafted free agent, he probably gets the route of the practice squad. You know, Strachan, big kid, like Chris Moore. Do these guys get through? Especially now that you can put veterans on the practice squad. That is obviously helpful as well. Okay. Offensive line. Tunsil, check. Coleman, check. Biadasz, check. Allegretti is going to make the team. Start is a different story potentially, but he's going to make the team. Connerly, Wiley, same thing. We'll see if he starts. And then that's where it gets fun. Is I think Nate Erbig is a lock to make the team. I think Trent Scott's probably likely to make the team. As a swing tackle guard, like he was really good inside last year. I don't know how many more guys, like, I think there are other good football players. I think Chris Paul's a good player. I think Chris Paul could mess around and get himself involved in that starting job at right guard while Cosme is out. By the way, I'm not going to put Cosme down because he is going to start on PUP, which means he can stay on PUP all the way through camp. He would be on that through week 6. Maybe it's week 4 now. I think they brought it back down to week 4.
Yeah.
But he's not going to count for a roster spot initially, so we don't have to worry about him in the 53. So maybe Chris Paul is the next guy, but because Allegretti can play center, and I think Erbig has played center too, like, I don't know about Michael Dieter making this team. I don't know that, like, a Foster Sorrell or Julian Good-Jones has, like, had some moments, but I kind of think, like, you know, Bobby Hart, they signed this offseason. But, like, I think that's the list. I actually think offensive line is kind of straightforward. Let's add Trent Scott. I already added Trent Scott. So let's add that's eight. I feel like they'll probably go nine. Let's add Chris Paul.
Okay.
Chris Paul. That gets us to 25. And that actually puts us in a good spot. That was less hard than I thought.
Offensively.
Defensively is, well, we're gonna do that next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming on YouTube too at the Team 980. And of course, you can now listen to us on iHeartRadio and TuneIn as well. We are in the middle of our 53-man roster projection. The offense actually went a little smoother than I thought it would. The defense, man, we were previewing it this morning on Take Command, Anthony, and I was looking at the defensive line, and there's like 12 guys that I'd be like, sure, they could make the team. How many D linemen do you think they wind up keeping? Are we at 9? Are we at 10? What do you think we're doing here?
I'm definitely leaning toward. I mean, I like the sound of that 12 number. I'm not going to lie, Craig. I was looking at.
But you can't keep 12. There's just too many.
All right, 11.
Okay. I think it also depends on how. I'm counting Von Miller as a. I know they announced him as an outside linebacker. I'm counting him as a D lineman.
Yep.
So let's go Miller. Let's go Daron Payne. Let's go Kinlaw. Let's go Newton. Let's go Armstrong. Those are all absolute 100% locks.
Is that five?
That is five. Then you get into some of the depth pieces. I find it hard-pressed to think they're not going to keep Javonte Jean-Baptiste after what he did last year. I don't know that he's next, though. Oh, Dietrich Wise is the other guy that's a lock. He's making the team. I think Cleveland Furl's a lock. I think he could be a starter for you on first and second down, eat up a lot of those snaps, and let Von Miller do his thing. He was pretty good on first and second down as a run defender early last year. He got banged up. He fought through it. He probably shouldn't have. He did not play particularly well towards the end of the season. But like early on last year, they kind of got what they expected from Cleveland Furl, and now he's got to do even less of it because he's behind Wise. I think Furl's on the team. I know that, Anthony, I don't know if you agree with that.
I was torn between him and Javonte Jean-Baptiste. I think one of them makes it. I don't think both of them make it, in part because I think Dietrich's going to line up opposite of Dorrance to start. And then you'll have Von Miller. And because you also got to keep in mind that the guy they got from the Bears.
Eddie Goldman?
No. Not Eddie Goldman. The Edge.
Jacob Martin. See, I think he might have lost. I might keep him off because of Von Miller.
Oh, okay. All right.
Like, if I'm looking at this roster and I'm Jacob Martin and I see the Von Miller signing, I'm like, oh, my job just got a lot harder. I'll tell you the other guy that definitely is making it. And I almost might put him over Cleveland Furl. Jalen Holmes.
Yep.
Holmes was really good last year. So let's put Holmes down.
Is Goldman down already?
So this is where it gets fun. What do you want on the interior? Goldman is one of a kind, and I think they brought him in for a reason. But like, what if they just decide they want more versatility and speed on the inside? He's got one pitch because he's a big dude. Like he's a nose, a shade, a one technique. But if they decide they want Sheldon Day, who can play a little bit more, Carl Davis, who can play a little bit more, I think Goldman probably makes it.
That's why they played last year, though, Craig. They went out and go get those guys, and they played well. But I think also that's why you go get Eddie Goldman.
So, I don't disagree.
It's no disrespect to, you know, Sheldon Day or anything like that, but I think you go out and get a guy like Eddie Goldman because you know that's what he'll do. And I think Sheldon Day, he played a lot of those early downs, and then, you know, Daron or Johnny Newton would come in and be in on those pass rushing downs. But I think it's all about what you want. I think you go out and get Eddie Goldman for that reason.
I agree with that. So I'm going to put Goldman on. that's when that now we're in fun territory. So I'm going to put Furrow back on. That's 9. We got,
what do you include?
Miller, Payne, yep. That's 2. Kinlaw, 3. Newton, 4. Armstrong, 5. Wise, 6. Holmes, 7. Goldman, 8. Furrow, 9. I'm going to say Sheldon Day is probably the next guy as an interior rotation piece.
Yep.
And then
Javonte, please.
I think John Baptiste. And that leaves Martin off, Davis off, and like a guy like Narelle Pollard, who had a nice camp last year, off. So I'm going to go John Baptiste there. So that's 10?
You said 11. That was 11. Oh,
that was 11?
Yeah, if you keep Javonte or Jean Baptiste.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It is. Okay, let's see if we regret that. Linebacker, and this is what they did last year, by the way. They kept, I believe, 10 plus Fowler would make it 11. So Wagner is on. Luvu is on. McGee is on. And if we do 5 here, we can keep Hampton and Medrano. That actually feels pretty straightforward. Are we missing someone at linebacker? Oh, Nick Ballore.
Ooh.
That's a problem. What if they going to try to get Medrano?
Medrano's the guy. He might be the odd man out.
He might get practice squad. So we're going to go. Well, that also then gets in. Do you want to keep the 11th D lineman, if you will? Or would you rather keep an extra, like, would you rather get Medrano? I have a hard time thinking they're going to cut one of 5 rookies they drafted.
Last year, did we have 4 linebackers make it?
I think it was 4 plus.
And we're at 6 right now. So
Fowler. But
it was 6 plus Fowler. Oh,
yeah. I mean, they have 4 plus Fowler, so it was 5. And so this year we'd be one heavier because we, you know, it's 5 plus Miller. But they also, McGee got hurt. And so he started the season, I think, on PUP. And so that created an extra spot. So they did some funky roster stuff. Like, I think they cut Sheldon Day, then brought him back or whatever that was.
Yeah.
So now we're in a problem because Nick Ballore is making this team because of his special teams acumen. Son of a gun. This is why it's hard. Okay, we're going to put Ballore out in a side column for a second because let's see how heavy we are. DBs. There's no way I have enough DB spots here. Holy cow. All right, DB. Lattimore. Amos. Saner still. Then who else?
You got Will. Will Harris.
Well, also at the corner spot.
Oh, you going corners.
Yeah, what's his name? New England.
Noah High. Oh, Jonathan Jones.
Yeah, Jones, Noah, and now I've got room for 3 safeties before we hit 53.
No.
That ain't going to work.
We have one more spot because if you scroll all the way to the bottom.
Oh, no, that's true. 52. That's true. Okay, so that makes me feel slightly better, but not super great. All right, Harris, Martin, Reeves, Butler, and then we also have Tyler Owens.
Mm.
Is there any other DBs that we're forgetting?
No.
Bobby Price, Ben Nickel. Like, there's some guys that could make it, but unlikely. Like, Kevon Seymour, maybe, but I kind of think that we're probably set.
He pops out those spots. Special. Yeah.
So we're too heavy with Owens and Ballore, 2 special teams guys that we got to find room for. Who are we cutting?
Medrano.
There's no way they're cutting Medrano.
Not
unless
cutting.
He just stinks. But like if you subject him to waivers, someone else can sign him.
What about Dominique Hampton? I think it's between those two.
They didn't spend the entire year redshirting Dominique Hampton and spend a 5th round pick on him to cut him.
I would go down to that D line then.
I think that's where it is.
Sheldon Day. Or Farrell.
Because that's the thing. It's like, where is – and by the way, we've already cut Martin. So we're already down a guy that I thought would, you know, had a really good chance. Obviously, then they signed Von Miller. How many inside guys – like, that's the thing. It's like, how many guys on the inside? So if you have Payne, Kinlaw, Newton, Goldman.
And then Day.
And then Day. Is that enough? Can you afford Sheldon Day knowing that Jalen Holmes can play some inside, that John Baptiste can play some inside? Wise can play inside? I guess that's where you go. I guess Sheldon Day, so sorry, you are going back to practice squad with the hope that you will eventually get called up if there's an injury, which tends to happen at some point on the D-line. So that puts Ballore in. And then we got to make a cut somewhere else. Maybe you go back to just 8 offensive linemen and you try to get Chris Paul through to the practice squad and you go heavy on defense?
Yeah.
So it's Chris Paul or Trent Scott. They're battling for a spot. Those guys, Nate Erbig, like, those guys are all battling for a spot. This feels incredibly dumb to be uneven, but we're going to roll with it. And we're going to – but it also is like, man, would they possibly say Reeves and Butler and Owens, you're battling for 2 spots? That feels crazy, but is it?
You bring Reeves back. He's on a 1-year.
Yeah, but he's like your captain.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think you cut him.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 DBs. Yeah, that's
probably too many.
Nah, that's probably right. 5 corners, 5 safeties with a bunch of special teams value. Noah, I could make an argument for if you just go with 4 corners, but that leaves you light. You definitely need really good practice squad depth there in case the guys get hurt. And maybe a guy like Seymour can do that with. But that's it. That's our initial 53.
Man, that was stressful.
Two quarterbacks. I mean, you could make it. You cut like a guy McNichols and C-Rod, and you go 3 running backs. So you cut Yankoff. That's another one. You could create a spot there. But, whew, man, that's tough. Good news. They got a lot of good football players. Bad news. Terry McLaurin's not in camp right now. We will next dive into off the field what Phil Mendelson, the chair of the D.C. City Council, had to say to Grant and Danny about the RFK situation. On the field, what Adam Peters had to say and Dan Quinn had to say earlier today. That's our pick 6 at 6 next on the Hoffman Show.